Welcome to episode 19 of the City of Champions podcast. My name is Edgar, your co-host, and I'm joined by my co-host Eugene. Today, we're joined by a very special guest, David Delgado of the OC Register, for a second installment of Who Got Next.
For those of you who are followers of our podcast, you remember David from our first segment of Who's Got Next. And this is just an opportunity for David just to jump on here with us and just highlight some athletes that he covers for the OC Register, some athletes from Southern California. So he picks five athletes who he feels got next, five star athletes that he wants to highlight and give some time to shine. David, thank you for being here with us, brother.
Thank you guys for having me. Second opportunity, man. Second appearance. You know, I'm glad to be on here again. I got five more athletes for you guys, you know, for Who Got Next.
Appreciate it. So, David, man, just real quick, just tell us kind of what's going on in the high school circuit, bro. You were texting with me last night. You were at a pretty big time high school basketball game. So what's going on right now, brother? What do you just give us a quick summary of what you're covering?
So last night I covered CIF, you know, basketball. It's the open division, so it's the top eight teams in the CIF Southern section. So, you got Modern Day, you know, Etowanda, Corona Centennial, Damien, Harvard Westlake, some of the traditional, you know, powerhouse programs. So, I covered it's pool play. You know, it's pool A and pool B. Modern Day's in pool B with Damien, Harvard Westlake, and Corona Centennial. And it's basically three games. The winner of each pool, after that, they go on to the championship game with the open division. That's what's going on right now. I mean, everything's going on right now. Soccer divisional, TIF championship just finished up. Boys tennis just finished up. I'm covering a volleyball game tonight. Semifinals as well. So that's, you know, D1 semifinals. Everything's going on right now. Baseball players about to start. Yeah, so it's like, it's crazy. Everything's overlapping this year.
Yeah, because of the COVID season. So that's crazy, man. Yeah, so Edgar, go ahead, bro.
Yeah, no, that's my alma mater, Corona Centennial. I know we've been good at football, but it never thought we came up in basketball, so that's good to hear. But David, give us your thoughts so far on the Suns Lakers series. It's been pretty heated. Want to hear what you think so far?
I mean, it just took a while for the Lakers to get, you know, acclimated to the playoff intensity. I feel like the Suns, you know, really brought it. They had more time to prepare for the Lakers early on. So, but I think more than anything, I just saw more energy. You know, more intensity and that desperation. Like, the Suns were playing with that in game one. You know, the Lakers didn't match that. Regardless of if your shots are falling or not, you really just need to bring that effort. So I think they did that more, you know, in game two. And then, you know, game three in the second half, they really stepped up. They just kind of, you know, bully ball, but, you know, they did their thing. So it's good to see, you know, that progression.
Yeah, man, definitely. I agree with you in regards to the bully ball, man. Some of these, I tweeted out that I think it was the second quarter of game three was like a 90s Eastern Conference basketball. It was like 16-11 the quarter was. And I think, but like you hit it right on the head, bro. The energy and the physicality. The Lakers are really punishing the Suns inside. And I think that's kind of the formula we're going to need because once the outside shots start falling, this series is over. I feel like it's over even with the outside shots not falling. You saw how the Lakers in game three, Wes Matthews hit a couple three and that busted the game open to like a 19-point lead. So as long as we shoot, once we get back to shooting just league average, like, we'll start blowing the Suns out.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm excited for Sunday's game. And only thing that kind of killed it was the Clippers winning last night. It's all good, yeah, though.
Yeah, man. It looked like the Mavs kind of gassed out down the stretch. But, you know, you got to give Kawhi and Paul George their respect, man. For all the slander we throw Paul George's way, he came to hoop, man. And so we'll see. It's going to be a good series, man. The Mavs aren't going to go down easy, and the Clippers aren't going to go down easy. So any thoughts on that series, David?
Yeah, you know, they finally, you know, the Clippers, they finally woke up, you know, they finally had that. Same thing with the effort. I think they just, I don't know what's been going on with them. They can't stop Luka. You know, they had to get the ball out of his hands. And, you know, three-point shooting wasn't as prolific in Game 3. But, I mean, I knew the Clippers were going to give a way better effort in Game 3. And, you know, I look forward to a long series, you know, in the first round. They're going to get tested. You know, it's going to be an interesting Game 4.
Yeah, man. We love some playoff basketball. I think all these series are going to be really exciting moving forward. It's going to be a good time. But let's transition to the first segment of this podcast. We have some fan questions, David, that we wanted to shoot your way. We'll all take turns answering. So here's the first one for us. All right. So at MicahHarry21, he's asking us, is Dave Roberts fired if the Dodgers fail to win the World Series this year? So I'll let you go first, David. What are your thoughts on that question?
I don't see how you can fire, you know, a World Series winning manager, someone that's gotten you to the World Series, what, like 3 times now in the past?
Yeah, 3 times.
You know what I mean? I just don't. I mean, I just feel like it's the fan reaction to definitely want, you know, and strive for their team to be the best possible, you know, version of themselves. But in reality, you know, it's very difficult to even get there. You know, to get in a position to be, you know, World Series champions is beyond difficult. So. The fact that they're always in contention, the fact that they're always one of the best teams in the league, I don't see it happening. You know, even, I mean, it'd have to be like something colossal happening in a World Series for him to, you know, even for that to even happen, you know, but I don't see it happening. No.
Yeah. What about you, Edgar? You and I are a little bit, I feel like you probably are the most critical of Dave Roberts out of the three of us. What are your thoughts?
I mean, pretty much the same thing, right? I think it'd have to be something pretty colossal. Maybe the Dodgers not making the playoffs, which could definitely happen, especially the way they've been playing and the way the Padres have been performing. Outside of that, I just don't see it. If there's an early exit, I think people start to talk about it going into next season. And if he repeats, you know, has poor performances back-to-back seasons, then I think that's when the conversation comes to life. Not so much because Friedman would pull the trigger himself, but because the Dodgers fan base is loud, and when they get frustrated, they're heard, right? And we saw it happen with McCourt, where we, you know, pushed him out. We pushed him out because we got tired and sick of it. But this year, I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, so I agree. It'd be very hard for me to see a scenario where Dave Roberts is fired. Even if we didn't make the playoffs, man, it would more than likely be injuries, right? Because that's what we've seen this year with the Dodgers. Like, when they've underperformed, it's been because of injuries. And so, even then, I think Dave Roberts has received the benefit of the doubt. So, I mean, 3 World Series appearances, and I think the last 4 seasons, and in the 1 year we didn't make the World Series, we lost to the Nationals in Game 5, who went on to win the World Series. So I think Dave Roberts is pretty much, I mean, he's safe, man. I don't think he's going anywhere. And I think he's been the kind of manager that the Dodgers want, a guy that balances analytics with good clubhouse relationships and, you know, managing the game with his instincts as well. So, I mean, the guys have nothing but great things to say about him. You know, and another thing is also he's a minority, man. And that's very important for the city of LA. The Dodgers have always been an organization that likes to give, that likes to have a diverse clubhouse, right? And I believe Roberts is half African American, half Korean, if I'm correct, or Japanese. Japanese. There you go. And so, you know, I think that's another important thing. I think the Dodgers like to have a diverse manager and a diverse clubhouse. So, I think he's safe, man. And I like Robert, so I'd like to see him stay. So I'm going to go to the second question here. MicahHarry21, he had a second question for us. And he's asking us, what is the 3 most gut-wrenching moments as a Dodger fan since 2010? The 3 most gut-wrenching moments as a Dodger fan since 2010. So I'm going to just give you, you know, you don't have to give me 3 at a time if you don't have 3, but we can just kind of talk about some. And I'll let you go ahead and start us off, Edgar.
Oh boy, you know, a lot coming to mind. I'm going to focus on one, but I've got 2 honorable mentions. The honorable mentions being 2013, Game 6. You know, it was a heartbreaking loss. We, you know, lost to the Cardinals. That's when we thought we had a real chance because we were so hot going into that series.
Yep, and Hanley was raking.
Exactly, and that's when Joe Kelly, who I've never forgiven, took him out for that series, and we fell flat after that. Another honorable mention would be Game 3 of 2018. And the reason why this one hurt so much, and this was the 18-inning game against the Red Sox, but the reason why this one was so frustrating is because we came back, tied the game, and I remember the ninth inning started off with a single by Bellinger. Yasiel coming up, no outs. He commands the shift, and I really wanted Roberts to call for the bunt, sacrifice bunt. There was a good chance with both of their speeds that Yasiel would get on base and Bellinger would move over, but he let Yasiel swing away. I think he popped out. And then the very next play, Bellinger ended up getting caught stealing. And so it didn't make sense to me, right? If you're gonna give a guy the green light to steal, why not call for the sacrifice on the play before and give us a real chance at possibly moving him over with, you know, a flyout and then scoring him on a ground ball or just another flyout, right? So it's that small ball mentality that we just haven't really taken into consideration. That's frustrating. But the one moment that, man, really breaks my heart is the 2017 World Series Game 5. And that was Kershaw. That was the 13-12 game. And it was so frustrating at the time, right? Because you feel like you have a good chance of winning. You've got Kershaw going on the mound. And it seems like we had a response for every single run that the Astros went on. But for some reason, they just kept on hitting the ball and kept on hitting the ball and kept on hitting the ball. And we ended up losing that game in extra innings. And in retrospect, knowing that they cheated, knowing that, you know, they knew what was coming, it's just so much more infuriating because we played well that game. We hit the ball really well that game. So it wasn't for a lack of runs. We had our A's going that game. And if we win that game, it's a completely different series, obviously, right? Because then we probably win, to be honest. But
yeah.
The cheating just compounded the frustration. And, you know, Kershaw getting hit like that, it broke my heart, man, honestly. But yeah, I think those would be the standout ones.
And just something to add to that Game 5 thing that you threw out, Edgar, it's Clayton Kershaw, man. This dude has been nothing but a class act in his career, respected the game, first ballot Hall of Famer. We can argue he's one of the greatest pitchers of all time. And, you know, the one thing that people dog him on is his postseason performances, right? And for the Astros to cheat against him, make him look worse, and then, you know, people, here goes Kershaw again, falling apart in the playoffs. But little do we know, it's because they were cheating that series. All right, but those are some good moments. Sucks to have to relive them, but yes. Yeah,
you know that Game 5 should be stricken from the record books, man. I don't consider it. I don't like, you know, when thinking about Kershaw's legacy, that's not, I don't, something I think about, man, because they cheated. So
yeah, David, what do you got? What do you got for some gut wrenching moments? So since 2010?
I have a few. Though. I had Game 5 as well. You know, the 2007 World Series, like Edgar, but I'm going to throw in the 2019 NLDS against the Nationals, Game 5. Kershaw coming in the eighth, you know, giving up the back to back bombs in the eighth, man. The thing about that, man, was, well, man, I was actually working, you know, at the office, at the OC Register office, you know, collecting scores for high school sports and everything. So we had the TVs on, we were in the newsroom, you know, chopping it up, and like, you know, I hear the crack of the bat. I'm like, oh shit, like, what the hell just happened? Home run? Oh damn. And then I hear it again. I think I'm seeing a replay. And little do I know, you know, it's another home run. I'm like, oh shit, like, what the hell's going on? Kershaw's just like, you know, falling apart. You know, that one hurt. You know, I don't think he should have been out there for the eighth, but that's for, you know, retrospect. You know. But yeah, that one is a game that I remember pretty vividly, that inning.
That and actually that was mine, man. I put that down right there. The 2019 National Series, Kershaw's giving up the home runs to Rendon and Soto back to back, which I thought was a poor move on Dave Roberts. Adam Kolarik had been handling Juan Soto the whole series and had kind of really handled him really well and kept him at bay. So for him to go to Kershaw, but you know how it goes, game fives and game sevens, right? It's all hands on deck. So if you can get your, and Kershaw's done a great job, you know, in the playoffs, out of, you know, coming out of the pen, he's always been pretty solid. You can look back to the 2017 World Series, Game 7. He threw four innings of, you know, shutout baseball coming out of the pen. But so I had two. Mine was 2019, David, the game against the Nationals that you threw out where Kershaw gives up back-to-back home runs. My other one was 2017 World Series Game 7. So just because of like all the emotions behind it, right? It's the World Series. It's Game 7. It's at Chavez Ravine. Sold out stadium. 50 plus thousand in attendance. The stadium is rocking, bro. I remember I was leaving work. I had to leave work early. I was like, I got to go get a pizza. I'm going to get my beer. I'm going to sit down. I'm going to chill. I'm going to watch this game. We're going to win this World Series. It's going to be glorious. And like the air was just like taken out of the stadium like so fast. Darvish gives up 5 runs in 1 2/3. And it was just like our hearts were broken so fast. And even though it was just 5-0, it just felt like the game was so out of hand, so fast, so out of reach. And we never recovered. And it just, it was a horrible experience, man. I know, I believe, I'm pretty sure that Rosa's my sister, and my brother-in-law Amos were at that game. And it sucks for all the fans who spent all that money, and we wanted to celebrate in LA, and then that happened. That was horrible, man. I didn't even finish watching the game, honestly. I was like, fuck this. I'm not watching this. I went upstairs and went to sleep, hoping that I would wake up the next day with news that the Dodgers won. And I was like, I just didn't want to feel the pain of watching 9 innings of us like get destroyed. But I woke up the next day, and I had all these text messages, and it was just frustration because we lost. So... why don't we move on from some from this depressing ass question?
Seriously,
Micah Harry 21, bro, why'd you do this to us? Let's go on to some other questions. So, at C Walvotny, they're asking, if you have to choose one team to repeat this season, Lakers or Dodgers, which team is it? So, Edgar, you go ahead and go first, man. Who do you got repeating this season?
Oh, boy. I think I got the Lakers repeating this season just because MLB baseball is so hard. I think it's the hardest game to go back-to-back or win multiple championships. And it rarely happens, right? I think the Yankees were the last team to do it. And that's probably one of the best teams in the history of baseball, that Derek Jeter led Yankees team. Outside of that, it's just really hard for it to happen. You saw it with the Cubs, who were, you know, pretty hot when they won, but came back the next year and just fell flat. The Dodgers, who, you know, we made it back-to-back World Series, but we lost both. It's just really hard to do it in baseball. Knock on wood that I'm wrong, because I'd love to see the Dodgers do it again this year. But with the Lakers, I just feel a game like basketball, you know, it really comes down to stars, right? And when you have a guy like LeBron James with the amount of experience he has, when you have a guy like AD with, you know, a championship under his belt, you've got other veterans on the team who've also, you know, been there, done that. That maturity, that experience can carry a team to a championship. I'm not scared of the Brooklyn Nets, to be honest. It's great that they can score a lot, but that's all they can do is score. Early in the year when we played the Nets, and I know that KD was coming back from an injury. I know that Irving got suspended, you know, early in the third, I think it was. But if you saw again, we were also injured, right? We were missing our key guys. So it was really bench versus bench. And if you saw the way our bench just bullied and out-hustled and just destroyed their bench, their second unit, that means something to me. that's got to give you confidence, right? And if the Nets are the biggest opponent we have and our stars almost match up in terms of how good they are, I don't care if KD goes off, he's going to have to score 50. If our second unit can bully their second unit, out-hustle them, out-defend them, then I think we can win. And so I think that's why the Lakers have a good chance of repeating.
All right, all right. So so let's go to David, man. Who do you feel repeats this year?
Oh, my choice would be the Lakers also. Just to, you know, for starters, to break the tie with Boston, you know, for the most, you know, NBA championships in league history. You know, we're currently tied at 17. So, you know, I would like nothing more than to get that 18th banner and, you know, best the Celtics one more time. So they're a great position to do so, you know, regardless of the seed that they're in right now. You know, they ended up in the seventh seed, but the Lakers are getting healthy right now. They're looking more like themselves. So my selection will be, you know, the Lakers.
Yeah, so I agree with everything you said, Edgar. Baseball, in my opinion, has always been the hardest sport to predict as far as like champions, because it's really like a game of inches. You know, one swing can really alter a game, one pitch, you know, so, and it's really hard in baseball to repeat. And I think the Dodgers have some teams that are pretty evenly matched with them. So I'm going to pick the Lakers as well. And it's a lot of what you said, Edgar. I'm not really too scared of any teams. I think it's either going to be the Bucks, Brooklyn, or Philadelphia that comes out of the East. And I would favor the Lakers over all of them. The Bucks just lost DiVincenzo for the rest of the postseason. Brooklyn doesn't have the size. And for Philadelphia, I just feel like if you can, you know, slow down Joel Embiid, their offense is very limited because of Ben Simmons. So I like our chances, and kind of like you said, man, baseball is so hard. And in basketball, when you have two dominant players on your team, like LeBron and AD, like two really game changers, it just gives you a great chance to win. So we're all on the same page. Lakers. Lakers have the best chance to repeat. So at Siwalvani has a second question for us. If you can go back and attend any game ever for either franchise, any game ever in the history of both franchises, which game are you going to? Which game are you choosing? So I'm going to start with you, David. Any game ever, Lakers or Dodgers, where are you going?
I'm going back to 2010. I'm going to Staples Center. I'm going to Game 7 against the Celtics.
Why are you stealing my answer for, bro? Why are you stealing my answer?
You gave me first dibs, bro. Sorry. That's where I would go. The reason why, I remember having to work that day. You know, I remember having to go to work. I was working the swing shift at the time, but I was like 10 minutes from my house, right? So around the fourth, I timed my lunch to take it, you know, right at the fourth quarter, and I went home. You know, I quickly like shut all the blinds and like closed my door. I was watching the game in my room because I can't really like watch with my family. I get a little too nervous, especially that game. That game was, I was just on edge all day, you know. So yeah, I would definitely want to see that live. And I mean, I wouldn't know it wasn't the best, you know, shooting performance for Kobe, all the injuries that he was, you know, nursing at the time. But, you know, dude's a warrior, and, you know, our test with the big three, man. It was ugly our game, but they test. Won. So, you know, our test with the big three, man. You know, so.
All right.
The post game interview, he's like, Kobe passed me the ball.
Kobe passed me the ball. Yeah, dude, for sure. So that was my original pick. I had a couple different picks. So that was my first one, just because of the history. Right, the history of both franchises. It's a championship game. It's a game seven. Nothing matches the energy of a game seven. I was on edge all game as well. I remember my brother Ugo texting me and calling me all game. I'm pretty sure he was locked away in his room. Also, told his wife and his daughters to leave him alone. And
oh, he was locked away. Yeah, you're right.
He was locked away in the room, and he was calling me like, "What's wrong with Kobe, bro? What's going on? Why can't we make any shots?" Like, oh no. And I remember just telling him like, "Yo, chill. Like, we're only down single digits and we're shooting the ball horribly. Like, the shots are going to fall. We're going to chip away. We'll be all right." And that's exactly what happened. That game, man. Oh, that game was crazy. That would have been a great one to go to. But I'm going to go with So my second choice, and that was kind of like 1A, 1B, honestly, was Kobe's last game. Just to be able to say farewell to Kobe. David, did you go with us to that Kobe's last season? We went to a game against the Bucks.
Yeah, were you with us? That was for your brother-in-law's
little bachelor-like hangout. Yeah,
that thing, yeah, the
bachelor. Yeah. And so we got to see him his final season. We actually, David, he balled out that game. He had a good game. Obviously, you know, he didn't do what he did in his final game, but it was cool to see him in his last season have one good, you know, final performance. But his last game was on some other shit. And it was a good game. You know, it wasn't just Kobe, like, just balling out to ball out. Like, it was an actual good game. And just that you could feel the energy through the TV screen, man. And I actually had class because I was doing my master's, so I had class that night, and so I had to record. Bro, my phone was off, no radio on the drive home, nothing. I told my brother-in-law, don't tell me anything, I'm gonna come through the door, just start the game off. And I come in, I just start the game off from the beginning and just watch it. I'm not looking at my phone. I just enjoyed the whole moment, man. It was everyone in attendance, the energy, just, yeah, man. So if not game 7 against the Celtics, Kobe's final game. What about you, Edgar?
Oh, man, I feel like you guys took some of the best moments for sure. And those are up there. I've got a few, right? But I think the most obvious one, and I'm going to make, you know, turn this into a Dodgers answer, or, you know, speak to the Dodgers top moments, but easily game 1, 1988 World Series. And the reason why is, it was a fairy tale moment, really, right? If you think about a dream scenario that you read about in a fiction book, you see in a movie, The Natural comes to mind. That was it. You've got Gibson, who in today's game would never even touch the dugout that game. He wouldn't even make it into the dugout that game. He's hobbling. He's injured. He's got, a couple injuries. I think the ankle and the hamstring. And he's going up against the best closer in the game in Eckersley. And the Dodgers are underdogs. You know, they're not supposed to be, you know, the favorites. They're just not. Oakland was really good that year. And you've got him coming up. I think the at bat was 15 minutes long, and he's just fouling ball after ball after ball. You could see the pain. He fouls it off and he's like hobbling to first. You could see he's got no legs left underneath him. And, you know, backdoor slider. And anyone who's ever seen an interview by him, backdoor slider, that's what Eckersley liked to go to, and he guessed right and just drove that, and everything else is history. From the moment to the call by Vince Scully, it was just one of those moments that you can't make up. Like, it was a fairy tale moment. So definitely that game for me. I remember being a little kid watching the replay and, you know, getting goosebumps every time. That's how much that, you know, moment meant to me. But if I were to pick one for the Lakers, I actually have a couple. I have game 7 against the Blazers. Lob.
Hell yeah.
Kobe
hell
to Shaq. Yeah. That game was crazy. Those days were stressful. You know, it almost seemed like, okay, you beat the Blazers, then you got the Kings. Or you beat the Kings, now you got to play the Blazers. And it's like, fuck. Can't get any time to relax, or you can't get any, like, you know, series that just feels comfortable. But that game, we were down and it almost seemed like we were going to lose, and we came roaring back, and the momentum shifted with that lob from Kobe to Shaq. Things just got crazy. You know, Shaq pointing to the stands. I think it was to his son or something like that. And Kobe, the guy that never passes, passing the ball up. It was just a special moment. The second one was, one that we came up on the anniversary just a couple of days ago. The Robert Horry shot. It was crazy. You know, you've got Kobe driving from the right side. He takes a contested layup, Vlade Divac there to contest it. And then Shaq, who, you know, the Diesel, the guy that never misses from that close, he misses a layup, you know, from that close. Like, give me a break. You're supposed to make those. You're supposed to put those back up and leave no doubt. But luckily, we've got a tip out to Robert Horry, who's just wide open. And he, the way he picks up the ball with so much composure, he goes up with like the smoothest stroke you'll ever see. And then everything after that was just madness, man, from the Cowboy running onto the court. And I think he was like the most enthusiastic. He just like ran onto the court, man. And, you know, you've got Robert Horry's look, something I'll never forget.
Swagger.
That swagger, man. He knew it was going in. He was just like, yep, I did that.
Yep, he knew. Like, it was confidence. Like, a lot of guys panic in those situations, but nah, he took the ball, he put it up, and man, that was just, I remember Staples Center just going crazy. It's one of those moments you never forget. It's one of those moments you remember where you were, what you were doing, how you felt. So, yeah, man, those moments for the Lakers.
And to add to that Robert Horry shot, bro, the post-game conference was hilarious between him and Divock. Like, the comments are making Divock, that's a lucky shot. That's a lucky shot. And Robert Horry's like, lucky shot? You better read the paper. Been doing that my whole career. Yep. That shit was hilarious. That was
big
classic.
Big shot Rob, baby.
Big shot Rob, for sure. I'm going to throw one more Dodger game in here. You know, just something more recent. Game 6 World Series, man. Down against the Rays. Blake Snell was dealing. Austin Barnes knocks him out. Mookie gets a hit. The Bellinger home run. The Mookie home run to like go up big. Urias coming in to close. Winning a World Series, even though it was in Texas and it was limited capacity fans and all of that, it would have been great just to be there to witness that. Either that Game 7 or the Game 7 against the Braves. Another situation where we were, so my fault, that Game 6 of the World Series or Game 7 against the Braves, having come back down from 3-1. That was a great game also. We were down, and then Kike comes in and hits a pinch hit home run. Then Bellinger hits the home run to put us in the lead. So either of those games, all these games would have been dope. Shout out to Seawall Votney with a great question to bring us back from the initial depressing questions we had to deal with. We appreciate that. We
now
appreciate
that.
Yeah, we're in a good mood. A good mood. All right, so let's go to @JuniorCampo17. He's asking us, all right, so the following are on the same day. Lakers Game 7 in the finals or Dodgers Game 7 in the World Series. Both are on the same day. You got tickets to both. Imagine you got tickets to both. You know, best tickets you could have, courtside, behind home plate, whatever you want, right? Which one are you going to? Dodgers Game 7 in the World Series or Lakers Game 7 in the finals? I'll go first. I haven't had a chance to go first. You guys keep stealing my answers. So I'm going to go first. I'm going Lakers Game 7. Because I want to be courtside next to Jack Nicholson. That's kind of a dream of mine. I've always wanted to be courtside of the Lakers game. I haven't had a chance to. So I'm going to Lakers Game 7. I want to be on the court. I want to hear the trash talking. I want to hear, you know, the basketball IQ. I just want to feel all of that. It's been one of my dreams to go to a Lakers game courtside. So I'm going Lakers Game 7 in the finals courtside. Edgar, what about you?
Oh, man, this is a tough one. I feel like a lot of this has to do with context, right? Who are we playing? Who are the players on each team? You know, if it's a Lakers Game 7 with Kobe, then, you know, I'm going Lakers. But then you think of, you know, the Dodgers, you think of the atmosphere, 56,000 people, you think of, you know, an afternoon game. The weather, you can almost feel it. The cool breeze coming in. The lights just like, you know, shining down on the stadium. The tension in the stadium. You think about all the elements. Ah, man, it's tough. I feel like Dodgers Game 7 probably. Oh, it's damn, I don't know. I really don't know, man. I feel like I'm giving a bad answer. I can't pick. It's too hard.
They're both your kids. You love them very much, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I would go with the Lakers. I would go with the Lakers game seven just because of, you know, the amount of big moments that they've been in the past, you know, 20, 21 years, you know. It seems like Staples Center is just used to that environment a little more than Dodger Stadium as of late, you know, the past two decades. So I would want to be a part of that environment as well then. And being Staples Center at in a big game seven. So I would choose the Lakers game seven.
Yeah. It definitely feels like you're having to pick between a child, right? I love them both equally. Exactly. Yeah, it's a difficult question, but it's a good one, man. Thank you at Junior Compo 17. So let's go to, I was discussing with someone on Twitter, we're discussing Kobe dunks, and we were specifically discussing the Kobe over Steve Nash dunk when Nash was on the Suns, and I was discussing with @Hank_grit, and it made me think of, what is your favorite Kobe dunk? Your favorite Kobe dunk in his entire career. So David, start us off.
Yeah, I mean, the Nash dunk was a big one, you know, in 06. He was the MVP, you know, he kind of just posterized him. But my favorite, or the most memorable one for me, would be the one against Dwight Howard in his rookie season.
Ooh, the baptism. The magic.
Yeah, man, nuts in his face, everything, man. Just welcome to the NBA, bitch. Here we go. You're not ready for this coming out of high school. So, boom, and you're just posterizing that cat. And, then he ends up becoming teammates with him. So, you know, that whole dynamic and the extra layer of, you know, pizzazz or whatever you want to say. But, you know, that's my choice, the Dwight Howard dunk.
Yeah, I was this morning I was watching a video of Kobe's top 40 dunks, and that was on there just to kind of get a little refresher. But that one was great because Dwight just kind of stands there with his hands up, and hands up, bro. This is Kobe. This is prime Kobe coming down the lane, bro. You better jump. Well, probably better he didn't jump because it would have been worse. So I'll go next, and I'll let you finish us off, Edgar, with this one. So I'm going to go with man, this is tough. So I'm going to throw out a couple. Fuck it. I'm going to just throw a couple different Kobe dunks that I like. I was always a fan of Kobe going baseline, reverse dunks. And he had a nasty one against the Timberwolves in the playoffs over Kevin Garnett and Wally Szczerbiak, where he goes baseline and he kind of windmills, reverses, dunks it, falls to the floor. That was a great one. In the Garden, in Madison Square Garden, he has Trust Brewer on the baseline, back to the basket, kind of post up, you know, spins off him, goes baseline, another windmill reverse. He had a similar one against the Kings. When he dunked on Yao Ming. But I'm going to go with something later in his career where Kobe was willing the Lakers, as, you know, his last healthy season, you know, the season where he tore his Achilles, where he's willing the Lakers into the playoffs. And we were really rolling because Kobe went on just on a hot streak. And it's against the Brooklyn Nets, where he comes down the middle of the lane and he dunks on Gerald Wallace and Chris Humphreys. Because this was already late Kobe in his career, but just still to show that bounce. So I'm going to say that's probably my favorite one because it was just Kobe still got that bounce in him. Even though he's an old man now, still got that little bounce. So that was great. So I'm going to go with that one. All right, Edgar, what about you?
I mean, for me, it's undoubtedly the Nash dunk. And the reason I say that, right, it's not just about the dunk. It was really about the context around the situation. You've got Kobe Bryant, who put up the single greatest season performance of any player in NBA history. And, you know, you can argue with me on that. You can say Jordan, but that was the single best, you know, season by a player in history, above Jordan, above Wilt. And they give the MVP to Nash. Back-to-back seasons. And I thought that was super disrespectful, right? Because, again, here you have a guy who averaged 35 points in a season when pace was at 99 or something. So he's scoring the majority of his team's points. I think he had 12 consecutive 40-point games. He had four 60-point games or something like that. He went off that year. He broke almost every scoring record. And I know a guy like James Harden, who went off a couple years ago, scoring a bunch of 40-point games and averaging really high into the 30s. But again, when you consider the pace, got, you know, teams nowadays are scoring 115, 120 points a game. Again, back then, teams were only scoring like 97, 99 points. So Kobe was just dominant. And to give a guy like Nash the MVP, and especially when Nash had never won anything, he failed to take his team, a good team, where he had so much talent, failed to take him to the finals. And you give him the MVP, that dunk was sort of like a statement by Kobe, right? You think he's the MVP? You know, I'll give you MVP, and just destroyed him. Not that Nash had any chance of blocking that shot, but just destroyed him. And the way the play like happened, it was like a scramble, and Kobe just came out of nowhere, swooped up the ball on a pass from Odom, who was on the ground, I think.
Yeah.
And then just took it up and so disrespectful, just took the life out of Nash. I think that's where he suffered his injury that came to bite us in the ass when he joined the Lakers.
Had to be that moment,
like when his back Kobe just gave out.
Kobe dunked on him so hard, broke his back.
Yeah, it just went into the years ahead. So I think that one for me was the, you know, the best one for sure. You know, obviously the baseline dunks, I remember those as well. Gerald Wallace dunk, I remember that one as well. One that we haven't mentioned is the All-Star game. KG to Kobe.
Oh, yeah, bro. The Garden.
Yeah. It was not a great pass, and you could just see Kobe reaching back to catch the ball, full extension, flying through the air. Just gets it with his fingertips and throws it down, man. That dunk was special, and considering that he was going up against Jordan, that was where Kobe sort of like announced to the league that I'm here. And, yeah. You know, we've all seen the documentary with Last Jordan Dance. And yeah, The Last Dance, and like how, you know, guys were talking about him. You could tell guys knew this guy was going to be big time, and he announced it with that dunk.
Yeah, man, that was a great call. Also a great play-by-play on that dunk. All right, man. Well, so that does it for our fan questions. Thank you to all the all our followers on Twitter. Those of you that submitted questions, we appreciate it. We'll make sure to tag you guys when we post it, so you can hear the answers to the questions. So much appreciated. And we're gonna take a break here. Then we'll transition to who's got next. Next segment here of Who's Got Next. And as we mentioned in the intro, we got OC Registers David Delgado here joining us. And so he's here to just spotlight and highlight five athletes he feels got next. And David, you sent me the list, and it's a diverse list. You didn't stick with one sport this time. I see we got some football players on there. We got some basketball players. And so just tell us who's got next, bro. It's all you.
All right, so coming in at number one, we have Malachi Nelson, quarterback at Los Alamitos. Number two is his teammate, Makai Lemon, wide receiver at Los Alamitos. Number three, I have Brooke Dimitri, guard at Mater Dei. Number four, Malik Thomas, 6'3 guard at Damien High School. And then finally, we end with Gage Jump, left-handed pitcher at J. Sarah High School.
Yeah, man, and I appreciate this list. I see we got some two football players on here. We got a female basketball player on here. And we got a male basketball player on here. And then we got a pitcher as well, a little bit of baseball, man. So I appreciate we love all the sports here on City of Champs. So I like the chance to talk about all these different athletes, man. So let's just go one by one, brother. And let's just, you know, tell us what you see in each athlete. So let's start off with who you have number one on your list, Malachi Nelson. Tell us a little bit about Malachi, bro.
All right, so Malachi is a sophomore quarterback, you know, 6'3", about 195. Recently, he won the Gatorade Player of the Year for the state of California and was also a finalist for the National Player of the Year for the Gatorade Award.
Wow, okay.
The state, you know, previous state winners have, you know, included guys like, you know, Emmett Smith and, you know, Christian McCaffrey. So, like, you know, some good, you know, like, future pros that have been on this list that have won this award, you know, in the past, so... It's a pretty prestigious list, man. So the fact that, you know, he won it as a sophomore is just showing how promising his talent can be.
That's what I was going to say, bro. To win as a sophomore, that's pretty big time.
Man. I mean, this dude, he's got it all. He's got all the tools. He's got the size. He's got the arm. You know, he's got the accuracy. And he's still improving. So, you know, Orange County football, CIF, Southern Section needs to watch out these next 2 years, man, because he's going to be a problem. He already is a problem, but he's going to be more of a problem.
And I see that in your notes, you threw down that he's been offered by 26 Division I schools and counting. And you throw out some, I mean, to be honest here, it's all the big programs, USC, Oklahoma, Alabama, Ohio State. It's all the big schools, man. So what is it about Malachi Nelson? I mean, he's definitely got next, bro. So what is it about him that, you know, the college scouts love and obviously, you know, other, you know, football scouts and whatnot love about him? Tell us a little, what is it about his game?
I think, you know, the reason why they're so like high on this kid is because I mean, he has good size, you know, first of all, like, so he's got like that good, you know, 6'3" is a good height, you know, for a quarterback. You know, he's not like too big, so he's like a 6'5", 6'6" guy. And he's not that small, like, you know, like a 6 foot or so. I think he's in that good range, you know. He's got the athleticism. He's got the big arm. Like, he doesn't really make too many mistakes. So the fact that he's like very accurate and sound and his football IQ is so high, I think those are all great reasons why he's one of the most coveted, you know, prospects in high school in the class of 2023. So
yeah,
look for more offers, man. They'll probably double, you know. So it's gonna be interesting to see where he goes. You know, he's got a few years to decide, but it's gonna be interesting to see.
So would you, because, you know, what I see now in football these days, especially with professional quarterbacks, is you got to have the ability to throw it out the pocket also, got to be mobile. You know, you don't see too many just straight pocket passers anymore. You got to be able to get out of the pocket and make throws on the move. Do you see that in Malachi?
Definitely, man. He's mobile. He's got the agility and, you know, the speed to, you know, make these those throws out of the pocket, like you mentioned. So, yeah, he's got that tool as well.
Yeah, man. And it'll be interesting to see where he picks to go to school, because that's a big thing for, especially for college quarterbacks, the program they pick. Because if you eventually want to make it pro, you really need a program that's going to develop those, you know, really that IQ and put you in a program that'll allow you to transition easier to the pros, right?
I mean, it'd be cool to see him, you know, stay local, you know, UCLA, USC. I don't know if UCLA has offered him, by the way, but for sure SC has. So, if, you know, these top prospects out of Orange County now, they're choosing, you know, schools out of state now more often than not, you know, with Bryce Young and DJ. You know, a lot of guys are going out of state to Clemson and Alabama, you know, so to keep him in state would be cool, you know, for the state to see him develop, you know, as a college passer. So.
We'll see, yeah, if you can say, you know? that's crazy, you know, because when you think about the Pac-12, they used to recruit Southern California so well, but man, there's so many programs that have developed, you know, and that are poaching the California talent.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, they you know, these programs kind of offer a better, you know, program where they can develop these players into professional players. Like, you know, that's their goal. So the fact that they're able to do that is why, you know, so many kids are choosing to go out of state.
Word. All right, man. Next on the list, is it Makai Lemon?
Yeah, Makai Lemon. So this is Malachi Nelson's favorite target. He's a four-star recruit, four-star, you know, wide receiver. There's, you know, it's his favorite target. They've been teammates since they were 7 years old. So obviously the chemistry and the bond and like the connection on field, you know, when plays break down, like they have that. They have that second nature. It becomes second nature to them. And, you know, Makai just has superior athleticism. Also, he's been offered to 20 schools so far. The majority of them are similar to, you know, Malachi Nelson. So, you know, potentially it could set up a package deal where they,
yeah,
you know,
that's choosing
to go to the
say.
Same school, man. There's been discussions about that and, like, you know, rumblings here and there. So, again, you know, it's just going to depend on the best fit, you know, for each player. But I know they would like to continue into high school, you know, and do kind of what JT Daniels and Amon St. Brown did, you know, for USC. So, and Amon Ra just got drafted by the Lions. And JT's in Georgia now. But the fact that they went from modern day high school to USC, you know, it's been done before. So we can, you know, see if they can, you know, be that package deal in the future.
For sure. And so when it comes to wide receivers, one thing I'm always curious about is route running. Because you see a lot of these amazing athletes that enter the draft, but they tend to struggle in the pros due to their route running. And tell me a little bit about what do you see with Makai and his ability to run like clean routes, sharp routes to get open?
Yeah, you know, the first thing you look for is just great footwork, and, you know, agility. And, like, he has those tools. He's a crisp route runner, runs great routes. And, you know, the fact that these kids, you know, they're training, you know, all the time. You know, they're in passing league 7-on-7. So they're constantly working on that footwork, constantly working on the timing. And, you know, he's only going to get better. So the fact that he has two more years to improve on those skills, those route running skills, is going to be a big plus.
So wait, Makai's a sophomore as well?
Yeah, they're both sophomore teammates, class of 2023. So yeah, they'll have two more years. You know, obviously there was no playoffs for football this year with the shortened season, only 6 games this year. But they got a sophomore season in. They made waves. So next year, with the playoffs being at reach, you know, they're definitely going to see what they do in the postseason together.
And talk to me a little bit about, have you seen, with the football season being so different due to COVID, do you feel like that's been detrimental to, like, athletes? Have you seen any, like, if it was detrimental, have you seen any effects on the field? Like, what have you seen? Or you feel like it's kind of just been, like, same old thing, just, the season's been in the spring?
So for a lot of the smaller programs, and they were dealing with, lots of injuries. You know, these teams, they're not as deep as other teams. They don't have just players to plug in and play. So a lot of teams I did notice suffered through the injury bug early on. And they had to cancel games, you know, because of the lack of players available. A lot of these players were also, you know, in multiple sports. So the fact that, you know, football was taking them out of others, or, you know, they wanted to, like, you know, be available for another sport, you know, also it had a role in you know, the kind of participation in CIF football this year. So definitely for some of the smaller programs, the injuries was a big problem this year. So we'll see, you know, how they, and how they condition and work out to prepare for, you know, this quick turnaround in the fall coming up.
Yeah, man. All right. So let's go to our third athlete here. We got, is it Brooke Dimitri?
Brooke Dimitri. Yeah. Brooke Dimitri, 6'3" guard out of Mater Dei. She committed to Stanford.
Oh, nice.
Next fall. Great program. You know, Mater Dei has had a nice tradition of, you know, developing great women's basketball players at the next level. You know, Kalina Mosqueda Lewis, she went to UConn. She's a WNBA player. Katie Lou Samuelson is another, you know, star from the past. So, you know, Brooke is kind of following in those footsteps to be the next, you know, Lady Monarch superstar.
Yeah, man.
She has that potential, man, yeah.
And Stanford is a great program. Traditionally, you know, one of the top 10 teams. Traditionally, you know, really making deep runs in the NCAA tournament. And I see on your notes here, you put down that she was invited to try out for the U.S. Under-19 women's national team.
Yeah, that's correct, man. Very prestigious honor to be, you know, selected to try out for that Under-19 squad. And just, it's a great honor for her. So it just shows you how talented she is to be, you know, to have that honor to be, you know, able to try out for the national team.
And what do you see in her game, bro?
I mean, she's got a good handle. She's got a great jump shot. She's just very versatile in her game. So,
and what are you thinking like that? Do you think, because one of the challenges with high school athletes transitioning to the college game is you got sophomores that are already developed there, upperclassmen, you know, you got other big recruits coming in as freshmen. So a lot of times the challenge is playing time and being able to come in and play right away. Are you feeling like she's ready to go and get into, like, this is a prestigious D1 program, man. So are you feeling like she's ready to go in there and contribute right away, possibly be a starter? What do you think?
Oh, she can definitely contribute right away. She has the, you know, she's been playing at Mater Dei, and this is a top-tier program nationally. I know she plays AAU ball as well, so, like, the fact that she's gone against top competition for the majority of her career already, she's ready. You know, she's definitely ready.
All right, man. Well, that's exciting, man. Hopefully we see her on some ESPN games, see her on some NCAA tournaments. That'd be great. We'll definitely be keeping an eye out for these athletes that you're shouting out, man. So let's hit our fourth athlete. We got Malik Thomas, guard, Damien, 6'3". And you put him down as a combo guard. So tell us, and he's committed to USC. So what are you seeing in Malik's game, bro?
So I saw Malik play last night for the first time. You know,
when
I covered,
right.
Yeah, I covered Damien versus Mater Dei. Damien won 55-51.
Oh, nice.
In a pool play in the open division, you know, opening game. So Malik, he didn't have, like, the best first half, man, but he's a grinder, man. He had 19 points, so he was a second leading scorer on his team. And he's got great ball handles, man. Like he's got great dribbles. You know, he's a physical player. Like he looked college ready. Just like, you know, on the floor, out of the 10 players that I saw, you know, on the court at the same time, he looked like the most college ready. Which obviously, you know, there's a lot of D1 commits on the modern day side as well. You know, got Nick Davidson going to Nevada. Wilhelm Breidenbach was injured. He's out for the season, but he's going to Nebraska next year. So these are like 6'9 post players, both of them. So they have the college commits too, but, you know, out of all the players on the floor, I saw Makai look like the most D1 ready. And, you know, just an athletic, you know, great burst and great speed and a great jump shot. I mean, it wasn't on point last night in the first half, but he made up for it in the second half for sure.
And I think that's a big call out. You said like the body, the physicality, is your body ready for the next level? Because there's a huge jump from high school to the college game, because now you're in the weight room all the time. And I know a lot of high school programs do a great job of getting their players' bodies ready. But it's just a different level when you get to college, right? You're hitting the weight room way harder. You're putting on pounds, you're putting on muscle, especially to be able to handle that, the physicality of that game. And because, you know, you're playing against some upperclassmen that, you know, in some programs you have upperclassmen that are 23, 24, 25, man. These are like men. You're not playing against boys anymore. Yeah, you're not playing against teenagers anymore. And committed to USC. And so he's a senior, Malik.
Yeah, he's a senior.
So he'll be at USC next year. And USC made a nice run. Was it Elite Eight or Sweet Six? Elite Eight, right? USC?
The Elite Eight, yeah. They made it to Elite Eight.
They made it to the Elite Eight this year. So USC has a nice little program bouncing back there. So because they were struggling for a couple years. And you also put down here, brother, he's the all-time leading scorer in Damien school history.
Yeah, last month, you know, he got that recognition. He finally, you know, broke that school record. So that great accomplishment for him, you know, to be the leading scorer, you know, in Spartans history.
Yeah, man, it's always big time if you're the leading scorer in your school's history. But to come from a program like Damien, that's next level. That definitely shows that you have game. And he's definitely like 6'3 combo guard. He fits the mold of what really basketball has become, right? It's basketball has really kind of shifted away from like pure point guards, and it's shifted more to like combo guard, you know, who's a guard that can pass the ball and facilitate for others, but also can drop 25 any game. And you see that with really every guard, you know, Damian Lillard, Russell Westbrook, even Ja Morant is a little bit more of a combo guard. So a lot of these guards now, it's a lot of teams looking for those guards that could do both. And so it's good to see that he has that in his game. We'll definitely be looking out for Malik over at USC, and hopefully they make another. You know, I'm a USC fan, so I'm happy to. I'm actually really rooting for all these guys, man. Malachi Nelson, Makai Lemon, and Malik to pick USC because I'm a USC fan, man. So, yeah. So I'll definitely be looking out for him. And so, like, let's finish off with number five. We got Gage Jump. Can we first talk about Gage Jump and how dope of a name that is?
It's an amazing name, right? You know, like these some players that I've covered, I'm like, damn, that's a really good name, man. Their parents did a great job, you know, just selecting, you know, a good name for an athlete. You know?
Yeah, man. And so he's on the bump, left-handed pitcher.
He's a lefty.
So
made it to UCLA.
And is he gonna go, or is he like looking maybe I get drafted?
I mean, I'm sure he's going to get picked up in the draft. It's just a matter of, you know, what round, what team selects him, and if he wants to,
and
you
the
know,
money,
pitch in
right?
college.
And
right, exactly.
Also, so. It's the money. A lot of times athletes are like, well, how much are you going to pay me? And then maybe they'll, you know, like skip on college, go straight to the pros. So tell us a little bit about Gage Jump and what you're seeing out of the left-hander.
So definitely, man, like as far as like his status in the program for J. Sarah Baseball, you know, they're coached by Brett Kay, who's a Cal State Fullerton alum. Coach Kay has widely regarded, you know, Gage as the best pitcher in school's history.
Oh, wow.
You know, this dude is like, you know, the ace of aces, you know. He had 13 strikeouts in a win over Orange Lutheran in his last start. That was the second game of a three-game series against Orange Lutheran. You know, the Lancers are obviously one of the best programs in the nation. They produce players like, you know, Garrett Cole Wynn, you know. So they have professionals, you know, that are known at Orange Lutheran. So the fact that Jay Sarah was able to beat them in a three-game series to decide, you know, the Trinity League Championship, their first since 2016, just showed how you know big that program has come in the last 5 years, and you know it was a great win, and Gage had a lot to do with it. So. But he pitched the second game of the 3-game series. He didn't pitch the final one.
Okay, and for pitching prospects, you know, what is he working with as far as like his pitching repertoire? What is he commanding? What's the fastball looking like?
Oh yeah, no, I can't like speak on the actual pitches because I haven't actually seen him pitch.
Okay.
This year. So, I mean, I don't want to like throw anything out there that's not accurate, you know. Haven't covered him this year, but obviously, you know, with what I told you about his coach saying he's the best pitcher in school history, he's probably got a right repertoire of, you know, pitches. I'm sure the fastball is nasty. I'm sure the curve is nasty.
Definitely.
And off-speed stuff is good.
Sure. Yeah, for sure.
So
yeah.
I'm watching some highlights of So the thing that stands out for me is he's got a major league delivery. He throws like a pro, right? And what I mean by that is that he's not necessarily relying on his velocity to get guys out, but he conceals the ball really well. Another guy that comes to mind right off the top of my head that does that in the major leagues and is successful is Trevor Bauer. It's almost impossible for the batter to pick up what he's going to throw just because he hides it so well. So if he's already mastered that, that's such a big step towards, you know, making the jump into the pros. So as long as he stays, you know, he stays healthy, I think just based on what I've seen, he'll definitely, he'll get to the big leagues pretty fast.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, Edgar, man. Concealing the pitch, right? There's so like, that's kind of like, they call that like pitchability in like baseball, right? Like the ability to like conceal the pitch, what pitches to throw. Tunneling is a big thing right now in baseball. Making your pitches look the same for as long as possible, you know? So does your fastball and slider look similar, and then at the last second it slides? Or, you know, that way the hitter's thinking the whole way, fastball, 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 and then, oh no, shit, it's a slider, right? And then they're behind the pitch, or they're ahead of the pitch, or they're just completely missing. So, man, if he's doing that already, hiding his pitches, mixing them in really well, I'm going to UCLA. UCLA is a great, you know, baseball program, and he has a great coach saying great things, man. I think that we'll probably see this guy in the pros pretty soon.
Yeah, man, I agree. Great assessment by both of you guys. I think that what's cool about it is that, you know, he's committed to UCLA. That's where Garrett Cole went. So the fact that he was able to beat Cole's alma mater in the final series of this regular season, that was like pretty cool fact.
All right, man. So, hey, thank you, David, for being here with us. Thank you for this segment of Who's Got Next. Thanks for spending some time with us with the fan questions as well, man. That was fun. It was a rough start, man. The homie Micah Harry set us up for failure with some of those questions. We were able to bounce back.
Yeah, man, it was good balance, man. I appreciate, you know, we have to have the highs and the lows, right? But yeah. I appreciate you guys for having me on, right? Always, man. It's much love, man. Always, man. Thank you, guys.
Oh, man. I think we're good for today, man. Great fan questions. We'll make sure to tag you all in the questions so you can hear our answers. We'll make sure to tag all the athletes so they can check out the clip and you know, hear us shouting them out and hear you, David, highlighting them. Again, David, thank you for being here with us. We appreciate it, man. And thank you to all of our followers. If you're not following us, make sure you follow us on Twitter at @_cityofchamps. Check out the shop on at cityofchips.com. Make sure you guys subscribe on Spotify or Apple Pod or whatever platform you listen to. And if you're on Apple Pod, man, show us some love. Hit that 5-star review. We appreciate all of y'all. Peace.